Welcome to the Garden Talk Podcast, where we interview growers from all over the world, both beginners and experts, seeking to learn more about what they know about gardening and how they do things in their garden. What's up, everybody? If you that don't know me, my name is Chris, aka Mr. Grow It. You're tuned into the Garden Talk Podcast. This is episode number 122. In this episode, I interview Kyle Cushman. He is an advocate, educator, and journalist, and has been gardening for over 30 years. One of the things that he's most known for is his plant training techniques, and that's what we're going to get into in today's episode. Kyle talks all about the various plant training techniques with a focus on increasing yield. If you want to see short, bite-sized clips of these podcast episodes, search Garden Talk Clips on YouTube. I also have a gardening channel where I have over 130 videos showing the plants that I grow in my garden. I'll have both of those channels linked down in the YouTube description section below. One of my goals for this podcast is to bring free information about gardening to the general public. That being said, I'd like to thank the sponsors of today's episode who helped make that goal possible. Thanks to AEC Infinity for sponsoring this episode. Check out their humidifiers, which can help increase the humidity in your grow space. Their humidifiers have 10 different levels and smart control features such as VPD and humidity programming, so you can get precise humidity control. Click the link in the description section below so you can learn more about their humidifiers. And the discount code MrGrowIt15 works on both Amazon and their website, acinfinity.com. Stash Blend. Stash Blend consists of several ingredients in one, so you no longer have to buy individual bottles. It includes corn steep liquor, seaweed extract, humic acid, beneficial bacteria, silica, and mycorrhizal fungi. It can be used in addition to your synthetic base nutrients or be used in living soil systems. Simply mix it into water and water your plants with it. You can get it at stashblend.com, link in the description section below, and use the discount code THESTASH. Spider Farmer. Check out their Glow Series supplemental LED grow lights. The Glow Series includes red LEDs, 650 to 665 nanometers, which is beneficial in the flowering stage. The Glow R40 is for a 2x2 or 3x3 grow tent paired with the main light below 500 watts, and the Glow R80 is for a 4x4, 5x5, or larger grow tent paired with the main light above 500 watts. Discount code MrGrowIt5 works on both Amazon and their website, spider-farmer.com. And we are back. Welcome to the Garden Talk Podcast. Today I am joined with Kyle Cushman. How are you doing today?
Simsalabim. That's an old Johnny Carson reference. I don't know where that came from, but if you're over 45, you may remember that.
Yeah, I have no idea what that is.
Johnny Carson used to do a bit called The Great Karnak, where you might remember this, where he wore a gold lamé turban. And he would give you the answer to the question before the question was read. And he would hold the question up and he would tell you what the answer was. And then he would open the envelope and reverse engineer the joke so that the question came last.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. That's clever. Thanks for coming on to the podcast today, man. I started doing this podcast back in 2021, and I've been meaning to get you on. There's been a large handful. It seems like they come in clusters of people who are requesting for you to come on. They're like, we need to see a Kyle Cushman, Mr. Grow collab. We need to see it. It did happen on your channel, right? On your podcast a couple months back.
That's right.
So for those of you that didn't catch that one, I'll definitely link that episode down in the YouTube description section below. But finally nice. Got you on my podcast. And we're going to talk about, I was trying to figure out what we would talk about. There's so many different avenues we can go. We're going to go plant training, but we
can also go plant. I'm so old. I have such a legacy. Just way too much to choose from.
Exactly. No, there was so many different avenues we could go. I mean, breeding was one of the ones I really thought about. But I was like, you know what? Let's keep it with the training first. You do a variety of training techniques. You have your own really signature training technique, which we'll get into. But we're going to keep things very elementary this time around, right? So very beginner focused. We're going to talk about plant training methods and the focus on really much increasing yield. I know not all plant training methods are done to increase yield, but you can certainly get a larger yield from doing some of these plant training methods. But before we get too deep into the episode, can you do an introduction? Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into gardening.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad you focused that question. Like, you were going to ask me about, tell me about yourself. And I was like, you know, I was born in a little shack in Syosset, you know. Yes, how did I get into growing? That's a good question. It's really a good question. So this was about 19, 87. This is about 3 years after I would have graduated high school. And I had a pot. I was a pot dealer. And I had a job, and I was a pod dealer, like, you know, your local pod dealer, you know, that, you know, you went over to his house and you hung out and you smoked a joint, you picked up a bag and you went away. And the guy who supplied to me, I had just moved into a new, I got a really cool apartment. It was actually a condo with a walk-in closet. And he comes over to visit me, and I show him around my house, and he says, "Yo, if you let me grow in your closet, I'll split it with you." And literally at this point, I had never even visualized that you could grow indoors. Like, you don't envision every plant that you come across in your life. Like, how does sumac grow? Or how does, you know, like, you don't have a visualization for every plant, food and fiber plant. And I just didn't at that point. And he says, "Well, yeah, you know, I have this little Emily's garden thing, and, you know, I'll give you a couple of containers of powders and a little pH test kit and a light." And I grew. And so now the whole idea was to produce the product rather than have to, like, get it from Mexico or Colombia. And that was how I got into growing, because my dealer was unsuccessful in his attempts. He tried several times. He got caught by, I believe, his mother growing in his house. And then he grew at his brother's house, and his wife caught them. And then he came to me, and he was like, and yeah, that's how I was introduced to growing.
That's awesome. And you've come so far since then. I mean, you've been a writer for High Times Magazine for over 20 years. Oaksterdam Imagine. University, you've got a place there. You've won several cup Imagine. Awards. Can you kind of get into some of those things?
You know, it was just a journey of really just putting one foot in front of the other. You know, it really wasn't until I met High Times, which was a complete accident. It wasn't until I met High Times that I thought that anything was ever going to come of this, except I was going to end up in jail one day. Eventually, you're going to get caught selling or now growing or dealing, or eventually you're going to end up in jail one day. And that's what my mom thought, and it was never a happy thought. And then one day I walked into a head shop, a tie-dye shop called Not Fadeaway Tie-Dye in New Paltz, New York. And the owner there asked, he said, "I'm going to close up for lunch. You want to smoke a joint with me?" "Sure." And then I went to reciprocate, and I pulled out my weed. I showed him my weed, and he was like, "Oh, my God." He's like, "You ever thought about wanting to be in High Times Magazine? My girlfriend knows somebody there." And there you go. So then I met High Times Magazine. That's a long story right there. I mean, I dropped out of high school, and I got my GED and joined the Army. And I really literally, like, loathed reading and writing. It wasn't something that I ever did for pleasure. But then when somebody offered me a job, all of a sudden I was like, I'm going to try to kick this in the ass. And that's what I did. I kicked it in the ass. In the first 12 months, I had 13 features. I had 13 pieces and 12 issues in the first year. And that secured my job there. And then I just continued to learn more, you know, about the culture. All of a sudden I was an advocate. You know, it was like, I took a job as a journalist, which I was really proud and honored to have. And I found out that I could do that. And then along with that, which I'd never realized, came this advocacy, which I'm a very intentioned person. I'm a very purposeful person. I don't do things incidentally. And then I realized that this was another great intention. And I took that on wholeheartedly and then started traveling the country first and the world and meeting all these amazing the luminaries, you know, from Keith Straub, from the director of Normal and the early days of the Hemp Fest, Vivian McPeak and the Peace Heathens. And all of a sudden I'm in the planning rooms with all of these people, these amazing events. And I'm just like, I'd never felt anything similar to how honored and overwhelmed I was with a feeling of purpose when all of this just evolved. I mean, I could write a movie or a book about that subject, about I mean, that's pretty much the whole ball of wax. It's like, why am I still here? Why are we talking to Kyle Cushman? Right? It's all wrapped up in that, not just the fact that the door opened, I put my foot in it and gave it my all, but then that I took on happily the whole advocacy thing and the normalization and the legalization. And it's just a fabulous, fabulous life. I wouldn't re-choose it any other way, honestly.
Well, I think I can speak on behalf of many of my viewers is that we appreciate your contributions over the past 30 plus years. You know, you've done so much between High Times and Breeding and Oak Street Amateur University and winning several cups and all that stuff. You've got a very long history of advocacy, and we appreciate you. So thank you.
Makes me feel really good. Thank you as well. And, you know, you continue the tradition, and there's more and more people that need this information every day. So, you know. Home growers. That's the new advocacy for me. It's home growers.
Nice, nice. So what is your style of gardening? I'm sure you've done so many things over the years, but say current state, what is your style? Are you indoor, outdoor, organic, synthetic, soil, cocoa?
So I am a home grower, you know? I don't have a commercial company. I don't have a commercial branded line. Of course, I represent homegrown cocoa very happily. But I'm just a home grower, and I put my home grow online on my Instagram, and I share it with people. And yeah, that's where I'm at. You know, I've done and seen it all pretty much, from the containers, the 40-foot containers buried in the ground up in Spy Rock and Mendo with the generators, and, you know, garages and bedrooms and warehouses with 250 lights. But now I'm lucky. I've roomed my home for a 10x10, so I have a nice 10x10 with four LEDs, all adjustable and all climate controlled. And I try to keep it as non-consuming as possible.
Yeah, I'm just like you, home grower. I can max out at 12 plants here, so pretty fortunate. I know some of the states can only max out at 6, so I feel fortunate that I can do up to 12. And yeah, really fun. So I think we relate a lot on that. We're indoor home grower. So on and so forth. Now, are you in soil or cocoa primarily? What do you do there?
You know, I only gave soil a couple of runs, and I was never ready to make the transformation, the whole shift in my head to it. The only thing I can say about cocoa versus sphagnum cocoa blends, or, you know, predominantly sphagnum soilless, is I find that they're more consistent throughout. In other words, I find cocoa changes its properties a little bit at some point when all of a sudden it breaks down. Now, that might have been old cocoa, like, you know, not your grandpa's cocoa. And maybe they've, but I always found that it was a little less consistent as far as the uptake and the release of actual nutrients. So I've always just stuck with soilless. I like using a higher pH. I like a pH closer to 7 than 6.
Got it. So pretty straightforward there. All right, let's get into the meat and potatoes of this, what everybody's been waiting for, training plants. So like I mentioned earlier, we're going to keep it pretty elementary here. Let's start from the beginning. What does it mean to train plants, and what are the benefits?
Well, basically, you know, there's very few agricultural crops, just as a comparison, that in performing their duties, that they don't train in some aspect. A good thing to look at is when I moved to Mendo, I noticed all the grapevines. And every year they harvest the grapes, and then they literally cut the vines back to nothing, to the stump. And they regrow all the vines from the spring through the summer. And that's because they're directing the energy to the fruits. They know how much fruit they want to get versus, you know, you can control the cluster of the grapes by how much vegetation ends up at the end of the time when the fruit set happens. It's the same kind of thing with cannabis. And so if you just left a plant under its own devices, you would have less nodes and less flowering sites, and they'd be more spread out over different various heights And so by training or super cropping, whether it's low stress training or whether it's high stress training, you're taking the opportunity to manipulate the plant and decide on the number of flowering sites you want in relation to the plant size and also, you know, how long your whole crop cycle is. So it gives you the ultimate control. You know, it's not as complicated as I just made it sound.
No, I think another good example is fruit trees, right? So like fruit trees, you can let them grow wild, right? But a lot of people have that one main trunk that comes up, right? And then the top branches are all fruits. It's pruned that way. It's trained that way in order to try to get the highest yield possible of fruit. So we do the same thing with these medicinal plants.
The orchards, you'll see, they harvest them, and then within a month or so, they go back and they trim them all down so they look like they've all got a pretty little haircut so that they roughly get the same number, same size of fruit. You know, maybe add percent for growth. But yeah, it's very important to maximize growth and to minimize vertical height and to maximize. We usually, most people will run out of horizontal height before vertical height before they run out of horizontal height in a home grow.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So when it comes to these medicinal plants, talking about yield, how much higher of a yield can you get from a trained plant versus an untrained plant that just grows naturally?
Another analogy. So, you know, if you have a plant that is leaning, maybe you look at it and you can tell it needs a stake or something like that. Right? A plant that is staked, rather a plant that is leaning, will always grow faster. Okay? So by providing certain support and limiting the growth underneath, nodes that are never going to get developed, branches that are never going to see the light of day, you're increasing your yield right there. Okay, that's far and beyond when you get into even just the exposure of the nodes or increasing the capacity for the plant to uptake nutrients and or water by bending and breaking and things like that, real, you know, severe things. So it's really, it's exponential. You can do one technique and it's going to help some. You can do two techniques, it's going to help a little more. You do three techniques, all of a sudden you're going to see a substantial increase in yield.
I completely agree, and I think that also goes down to how long you're vegging these plants, how big are these plants you're actually growing, right? I mean, if you're keeping things small, just doing a 30-40 day veg, me personally, my experience, I've grown a untrained plant right next to a plant that I've trained. And I went from 5 ounces to 8 ounces. So I got 3 ounces more from that trained plant. So
yes,
you can certainly, in my experience, just keeping a small home grow style, can certainly have several additional ounces just from training your plants. So I think that's one of the reasons why people practice it so much.
One thing that I did learn pretty recently, just in last few years of touring large grows, Santa Barbara and something like that, I noticed a guy who, of course, you know, they need thousands and thousands of clones, you know, to do these acres of outdoor greenhouses or even hybrid greenhouses. And I noticed that, when I take clones, I probably take 4, 5, even 6-inch clones because I have all these, I can bury it a couple of inches and I'm going to top and do all these things. But, you know, when you take commercial agricultural clones, they're usually pretty small. They're usually 2 to 3-inch clones. And what I was noticing was that basically, as soon as they had grown an inch and rooted, they were topping them. And I asked him, I said, do you do that all the time? Do you top your clones so early? And he explained to me how this is a really important technique. Because I used to wait until the plant was virtually developed, like 5th node, 7th node, multiple sets of full leaves, and branching already coming out. And then I'd use this spiral staircase technique where I take a leaf from each side to open it up. No, top your plants as soon as possible, because what that's going to do is, as soon as you top them, it's going to encourage lateral branching. And now your lateral branching is going to be the height of your plant, instead of having any apical top whatsoever, virtually. So that's something that I did learn early, is top as early as you are comfortable with.
And so topping, for those that don't know, is really just taking the top of the plant and either pinching it off or using trimmers to trim it off. Are you a pincher or a cutter?
I've always been a pincher. I never had any trouble visualizing where I was supposed to do that. You know, the top of the plant is just simply the top of the plant. And you should just take off a burgeoning, newly opening set of leaves and pinch. And then, of course, there's that old technique that came about from a tip of the month that I wrote in High Times magazine that got labeled Fimmit. And I love this story, because Fimming, everybody would swear it means bleep, I missed, right? Because the theory was that if you cut it cleanly, like with a scissor, that it's not going to grow back. And then the two nodes that would have popped out on the side of the stem is what's going to take over, and you have a nice clean V. But if you kind of mess it up and make it all messy, sometimes, very often, nodes will shoot out of there in addition. And sometimes there's 3, 4, 5, crazy numbers of them shoot out depending on your growth rate and stuff. But it was never intended to be Fimming. The tip of the month came from a dude who signed his letter Fim. I believe it was his name. It was from Fim. Didn't say anything about missed. Just the culture itself attached that acronym to it. And I think that that's hilarious.
That is hilarious. I had no idea that was the case. I heard the F I missed. I heard that one, but I didn't hear about it actually being somebody's initials or name or whatever.
Yeah, I love that.
So when you do the topping or the Fimming, what node are you waiting until the plant has grown up to before you do your first topping or Fim?
Well, I used to wait for 5, maybe even 6 or 7 complete sets, which would mean that you'd already had 1 or 2 sets of branching coming out. And so the top of your plant is at least several inches taller than those side satellite branches. And like I said, what I saw in a commercial setting was that, do it as soon as you know that your plant is flourishing. And that's going to allow you to have a wider plant rather than a taller plant, because the plant is just programmed to grow as tall as possible, because in the big bad jungle, the actual jungle where things grow, the one who grows the tallest gets the most sunlight. And very often, ones that don't grow tall enough don't get any sunlight and literally just croak and die. So it's going to depend on where you took your cutting. But so that's why I say it's not really, it doesn't really matter the actual maturity size of the plant, how many nodes it has. What matters is that you've planted it and watered it, and the roots that were coming out of your clone are now coming out of the media in which you planted it. As soon as you see that, it's acceptable to top it.
Understood. For me, I usually grow from seeds, so I am kind of one of the guys who are counting the nodes, and I usually do it at like the 4th or the 5th. Now, do you just do one topping, or do you do your initial top and then top some of those side branches that kind of grow up?
Well, it kind of depends on whether you're, if you're growing for commercial, then you really try to condense practices into the most effective, most efficient. And I think that that's probably a singular top and probably a singular transplant, into its final home. When you have options to, I see these guys growing on lines where they interweave the plants and they make them look all pretty and they put them through the chicken wire and, I think one top is most of the time is going to be sufficient. It's only when you and I'll say the reason why I say that is because by the time you get to the thought of topping a second time on that same plant, I think that there's a better way of utilizing that vegetation than there is topping it off. Of course, the secondary goal of topping, other than yield enhancement, is maximizing your the space that you have. And if that top that you're thinking about topping again is because if you bent it over or tucked it under somewhere, it would just be growing outside of the horizontal space that you want for that plant, then you should take it off. So that's, you know, that's my explanation is one top should be sufficient, but if you feel like if there's some satellites that are growing out of the way and you don't think you can weave it somewhere or put it somewhere efficient, then top it again. And of course the nodes will just take their place. No topping, once you flip flowering, unless you missed it. You should know by then whether you want to use that piece of vegetation to gain mature flowers or not. If you've noticed a piece underneath that you missed and it's not going to do it, get rid of it. If something is shooting up and you don't like it, but the best thing to do would be to bend that down and just secure it with a twist tie or a piece of string or the super cropping technique, and then utilize that vegetation rather than chop it off and throw it in the garbage.
Really good advice there. Yeah, and I'm with you on the one top. I've done it so many ways over the years. Top once and then top. So those branches, top those branches again. And I played around a lot. And I find myself in, you know, the past 5+ years, really just doing that one top, letting those side branches come out, and then just doing low stress training from there, which we're going to get into here in a little bit. But right. But yeah, the one top, one of the main reasons why I do it is just to get that side branching. There's some phenos out there that I'll grow, and I don't need to top at all. The side branches are just natural. It's good to go. But having that one top in there really helps with those side branches and bring things out horizontally, like you mentioned.
Right. For example, I'm finishing up 6-foot tall plants in my tents right now, and I think I topped those 3 times so that I could end up with 22 dozen tops, you know, maybe even more. So that's 6-foot plants. I topped them 3 times.
Depends on your goal. Yeah. Yep. So right. Awesome. So we got topping, we got fimming. I do want to get into one of the things you're most known for, which is the chiropractic training technique. Can you describe what that is, how you came up with it, and how to do it, so on and so forth?
I love that name too. Somebody along the way, like 10 years in, said, hey, that's like chiropractic, Cushman chiropractic. I was calling it super cropping. And basically super cropping to me is any technique that enhances yield, you know, hence super cropping. And the chiro came, interestingly enough, a long, long, long time ago. It was like literally one of the first stories I was ever sent to cover for High Times magazine. And I drove there from New York across the border in Ontario or something. No, it wasn't Ontario. It was anyways, and I was going to meet one of the few legal patients in Canada. Like, just like us, there was only a handful of them back then. And it was a young cat. He was like 18 years old. He was living with his mother, and they were only allowed to have 2 plants. And so he had 2 plants, one each under 1,000-watt parabolic. Do you remember those 7-panel, 45-inch parabolic reflectors? It looks like a dog cone collar around an exposed bulb turned upside down. I actually used those for a good the first 8, 10 years of my growing. And so what he did was, because he was only allowed to have 2 plants, he basically had the plant right underneath where the bulb was. And he had the plant trained like a candelabra. So the bucket is in the middle, and he's got a little bit of stalk coming up. And as soon as the stalk starts, he's got a branch trained out like this. And there's little nodes sticking up here and here and here. And he's got a branch coming this way. And then there's nodes sticking up here and here and here. So if you could picture underneath this parabolic light, the light hangs down to here, he has a plant that is all trained out with all these branches and all these nodes standing up so that the ones on the outside are the same distance from the bulb, roughly 2 feet from the bulb, you know, 2.5 feet, as the one underneath it. And so he created this arena underneath of this plant. And he did it with a combination of bending and twisting. And he was using, it was like a floral, the wire they use for floral arrangements to keep them in place. It's a real stiff wire. And it was the most amazing thing I ever saw. And I, being more lazy than he had more time on his hands than I did to do that one thing, I guess, and I had a real job. I just started finding a way to twist and bend, and then kind of like I'd massage the plant. And as I'm doing this, I slowly bend it over. I'd first break the inner herd and then slowly bend it over like this until it sat down perpendicular, and then take my thumb underneath and do a little pinch, just a little pinch. Just enough so that it couldn't grow back up there. It was much more efficient for the plant for the tip to just grow up. And so without all that wiring and without all that tiring, I came up with that super cropping, and I started doing this candelabra shaping so that I could, one, keep my lights lower to all of the budding sites, And so the techniques before me that was like Scrog, right? And the thing that I didn't like about Scrog was it locks your plants into place. And being a journalist, I always wanted to be able to find the best angle for the photograph. And so I developed that along with the TP technique, where you take three stakes and put them in like a tripod in the bucket and bring them together at the top like this. And then you tie strings from the top of the teepee down to the branches so that you could support the larger branches in the end. And I still had autonomy on the plants. So it's just it's like me holding my pen. I hold it like between this finger instead of this. I always got to be different for some reason.
That's really interesting. So you were the creator of the super cropping, huh? I didn't know that.
Well, you know, I don't, I'm sure that it was, it's like I didn't create veganic farming, you know, when I designed Vega Matrix, but I did highlight it. I did kind of bring it to the forefront, and that's maybe what I did is, you know, I brought it to the forefront that you could do these uber manipulations. I used to tell this story about somebody who told me once, literally this old man. He said, yeah, when I grew, we grew in the woods and stuff. He said, when I put my seeds in the ground, I'd come back later in the season and I would just stomp on them. I'd just stomp on them, crush them, boom, boom. I'd walk through the garden two or three times. And then the ones that grew back up were the strongest ones. And I didn't have to worry about them going too tall so people could see them. It's like they're weeds. And, you know, you can manipulate these things. Amazing. I suggest, I don't have any sites committed to memory, but if you look around, there's these plant artists all over the internet that are doing these bonsai. You know, did you know that you can bonsai any plant?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've seen it.
It's not people think that a bonsai tree is a bonsai tree. It's literally, you can bonsai any plant, and is extremely, extremely conducive to all kinds of manipulations. The trick is, which ones get you there the fastest and which ones are just ornamental, right?
Yeah, and you can be very extravagant with things, like you mentioned, or you can keep things simple and just not even doing a topping or a fimming or really doing any high stress training techniques where you're damaging the plant at all. You can just do what's called low stress training, right? Just bending the branches down. Can you talk to us about low stress training, what that is, and maybe how you go about doing it?
Well, I use low stress training as like I said, a second or a third technique. I've already done several. I've already broken the main stock. You start off right at the bottom of the plant. And people wonder when you do this. I don't do it when it's early or young. I usually do it. I used to do it a lot, but I found one or two really good treatments at the right time is the best thing. So like a week or so before flowering is really all you need. You start at the bottom and you, in opposite directions, if you stabilize the plant, you'll hear a snap. Sometimes it's pretty darn loud. And if you let go, the plant's not going anywhere. You've just broken the inner herd. And then you work your way up every inch or so and break and every branch. You do that like that. And you create these really nice knuckles that make the plant stand on its own. And also you're increasing the capillary action inside the plant for its ability to take up water and nutrients. And so I start with that. And then as the plant progresses and I have these branches that are outgrowing, even after I do the topping at just the right time, you're still going to have, 2 weeks in, 3 weeks in, 4 weeks in, whatever your vegging is. I only like to do 2 or 3 weeks usually. You're going to have a couple of branches. So as I'm going back for my weekly super cropping, Cushman Cairo treatment, that's when I'll do where I massage it and I bend it over and then crack it right where I want it. So I'll look at the plant from above and I'll find a spot where that branch, if I bend it over, is going to take an open spot and I bend it there. And then finally, when the plants are kind of like their shape is all good and I'm like a week into flowering or maybe 2 weeks into flowering and I see what's going on, now I'll use a passive technique to just finish off where I want everything. And that could be by putting a stake in at an angle and then pulling this branch over to the stake and just clipping it to it so that now there's room in between the branches. So you're opening up the center of the plant, or simply taking a branch that I've already without a stake and just finding a node where you can attach a sling and then just putting a hole in the top of the bucket and then pulling that out slightly and securing it to the rim of the pot. And so now that's a good way of opening up. So those are passive ways where you're not damaging or wounding the plant. You're just moving things to make the absorption of light more ideal and the actual physical structure of the plant so that you're filling in spaces and taking advantage of opening up the plants so that your secondary and all the lower internodes get light. An even canopy is a grower's best friend.
I like the way you explain that. You explain it to a beginner can pick it up, and even just bending the branches out to get light in the middle is definitely beneficial. It can definitely help increase light down in to penetrate the canopy, and that can certainly help increase yield overall. So appreciate you explaining that one.
Another thing, so just to spend a little bit is, what I was going to get into was, and the next thing people want to know is about deleafing and denoding.
Yeah, let's get into that. I was going to talk to you about that.
So this is a very important part of maximizing your plants so that you get the right amount of full mature flowers as opposed to all kinds of errant little undeveloped larfy, immature stuff. So what I like to do is the first time I clean up the plant, what I initially wanted to say was, so when you're manipulating the plant and manipulating the branches to maximize the light coming in, you're going to have all kinds of leafage everywhere popping up and big leaves from the interior. What I say is interior leaves, interior pointing leaves, you always remove, okay? Because they're going to be covering something up. So that's an easy one. I think the trick is to leave both nodes and the lower leaves, because those are your solar collectors. So if you lollipop, as they like to call it, The first time you clean up your plants, and as you're denoding, you remove all those lower leaves, you're going to slow the growth of your plant down, I'll dare say 10, 15%, unless you're growing at a very high density. If you're growing plants that are allowing to be receiving each their own full intense direct light, meaning they're not smushed up against each other, don't remove those lower leaves until later on when flowers start developing and you're really worrying about airflow and stuff. Because what you want to do is you want to get down underneath the canopy of your plant and look up into the light. And everywhere where you can see from the ground and you can see the light, that's photons of light that is getting wasted. It's going from the light and hitting the ground. So if you have leaves, intermittent leaves, even though they may be three nodes down from the main leaves, okay, if you've got a leaf here and a leaf here and a leaf here and a leaf here, it's collecting secondary light. And a little secondary times 4 or 5 on each plant adds up to substantial light. And that adds up to root growth and taking up water and nutrients. So don't remove that stuff the first time. Leave it through veg and leave it into early flowering. And so when you get ready to flower about 2 weeks before, like when you do the first chiropractic, is when I'll start denoding. And what I do the first time is, it may sound crazy, but I denode either just leaving the tip and like one or two nodes or virtually all the way to the tip. I will leave no nodes. I may have 8 nodes on this branch, and I'm going to denode all the way to the tip, and I'm going to leave all those little leaves in between that are there. And it's going to be bald all the way up to the tip. Now, that's because I like to grow a lot of sativas. And now I'm a week before flowering. That means this plant is going to stretch for another 3 to 4 weeks, giving me another 6, 7, 8 nodes from where I left it. And that's going to take away all my larf, and I don't have to go back in and do it again. Now, if I'm growing an indica or a hybrid, I'll leave the top and just 2 extra nodes. And then by the time bud set happens, you've got your 6 to 8 nodes. Anything below that is garbage. But if you lollipop and remove all those leaves, the first time you do that, you're going to slow the plant down.
That's an interesting way to go about it. I haven't heard anybody doing it that way. It's something that I probably want to try out in the future. Because I totally get what you mean by that. It can certainly slow things down if not done properly.
And the other thing too is when the plant, the plant wants to grow sets of leaves. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's what it's going to do, right? So if you have a nice long hardy branch, you know, I'm growing, you know, you're growing plants that are 1 foot tall that are going to flower at 2, 2.5 feet. I'm assuming. Okay, that's kind of an average size height, a 2.5, 3 foot tall flowered plant. You're going to have nice, long, hefty branches that are 1 foot long, and they're going to have lots of nodes on them. And there's going to be 4 to 5 leaves in between there from the top and the bottom. And I'm telling you, you leave a branch for a couple of weeks of vegging where you would have taken off those 4 or 5 leaves, it's not only going to grow slower, but it's going to stretch more in between the nodes because it needs to throw out more leaves because it's trying to replace what you took away.
So what about like defoliation though, like just plucking off leaves or like leaf tucking? Do you do any of those?
Well, that's how I learned that leaving them was so important, because when I was really young and I was 25 years old, 24 years old, I started growing. I didn't have any guides. Well, there was actually, the Ed's guide was out. I found that tucking was very useful. And I'd do it several times a day. I would go into the garden and I would tuck them down and they would pop back up again. And I'd notice that they were blocking, you know, branches and nodes that I wanted to do. So I'd tuck them down again. But then I learned that if you leave the exteriors and wait and develop the interior of let the branches and nodes develop on the interior, it's a big increase. Just how much energy that plant can absorb, how many photons of light, as opposed to the surface area. Just use everything's life is math, right? So if you just removed, if you denode, like later on where I do, like I'm a week into flowering, and I'm going to remove every leaf that is not 50% of the height of the plant. Any leaf that's not 50% in the middle or above, that's when they go. And so now I get the nice airflow and I get more water turnover and all of that like that. But before that, those few buckets that I'm pulling off and you fill those few buckets, imagine the surface area of supplemental light. Like I said, just get underneath and put your eyes and look up. And if everywhere you see a crack that you see the actual light array, that's if don't remove that leaf. Imagine like pulling it and now you see it and now you, yeah, I'm getting a little.
No, I understand. And I agree with you. I like to leave a lot of the outer leaves for the reason you mentioned, and also some of the lower leaves. And one of the things that was in one of the videos I created, gosh, it had to have been 5 or 6 years ago now, that's on my channel, talking about lollipopping and defoliation, is leaving kind of the lower set of leaves right above the lollipop. I used to lollipop at typically still do a quarter to a third of the plant. And then that first batch of leaves, leave them. Some people take them off, and I usually leave them. It kind of looks like a skirt. I call it the skirt technique, is leave it there. Because another reason why to leave it, not only for light penetration, like you mentioned, is like you want to capture some of those photons that are there. Those are solar panels. But this is also going to help you identify if there's a problem happening, right? Some of these problems that happen are going to be on those lower leaves, right? Like nitrogen deficiency, for example, starts at the lower leaves. So like you're able to still see that and then take action right away, versus if you were to remove them, well, you might not notice as quickly. So
I call those indicator leaves. And that was taught to me by an old outdoor grower. You always want to have some of the largest, oldest leaves, because they are the only early indicator of some of those nutrient deficiencies. And there's another reason I like to leave actually some of the older, largest leaves, is because, again, it goes back to the photography and the journalism. It just looks really amazing when you have that original seven bladed leaf that ends up turning all fall colors, you know, and it's this big, it's as big as a dinner plate, and there's the plant behind it like that. It just makes for a great photograph.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've had my fair share of very large leaves that I've taken pictures of. It's exciting. It really is. So of all these training methods that we talked about, you've done quite a bit over the years to many different plants. What are some of the biggest yields that you've gotten from plants that you've trained?
I'm always shooting for yield. It's so funny. It's like I tell everybody, I always try to grow the best, not the most. But really, let's get real, Adam. You know, I'm Adam before I was Kyle. And it's like, that's why how I overgrow my garden all the time. It's like, I don't really intentionally set out to grow the most. But then once I get started, I'm putting so much energy into maximizing everything from cycling the plants as much as possible to develop the most prolific roots to, literally not overdoing it, but feeding hard because the plants want food in order to produce a lot of fruit, you know, and really overdoing it. And then of course I can't get in there and take pictures of the plants anymore because they're so big that it doesn't look like they're supposed to. Anyways. What was the question? I lost the question.
Largest yields, like biggest yields you've kind of gotten from trained plants.
The biggest plants I've ever grown indoors are actually probably might be in my tent right now. And they're equal to the ones that I did back in Mendo days. I grew a little bit over a pound of plant, and they were Sage Master Adam Dunn's THC Sage. And I grew, it was right after I got arrested, believe it or not, in Mendocino. And the trial was pending and everything, but they didn't take away my rights to grow. So like literally I got out of jail the next day and I went and planted six plants. So I had medicine. And so at that, you know, it's, so you're only allowed to have six. So I grew them to the ceiling and probably vegged them for, you know, I don't know, two and a half months or something. And a pound, I think it was close to a pound and a quarter indoors in my basement. And that's what I've got now. I've got these 25 gallon pots, 6 foot tall. I vegged them for 90 days. And they're just finishing up their eighth week here. Right before I get to go to Barcelona, I'm going to be harvesting here pretty quick. And they're going to be 12 to 16 or 18 ounces each. So I only got eight plants. It makes it really easy to take care of, you know?
A lot of trimming.
Yeah, but it's really easy because everything is just super, super chunk.
Colas.
And then there's really not much trimming to do on some of this, the varietals that I'm playing with. The Grape Ape and the Cherry Lopez is like little here and there, and it's just very, very yummalicious.
That makes things easy.
Yes.
So kind of getting towards the end here, I want to get some advice from you. Really advice for beginners. Think about back when you first started growing and you were a beginner. And if you could tell yourself what you know now, what advice would you give your beginner self?
Well, back then, my beginner self would not have told anybody, and my first crop that I ever grew would not have gotten stolen. But besides that, you know, it really is the plants that are the healthiest are going to be the most potent and yield the most. So focus on growing healthy plants. And the key to doing that is observation. Unlike a lot of other skills that you acquire, it takes a lot of doing over and over and over again, training muscles and brain and coordination and all these things. Gardening is really more about observation. And if you can, by observing, you learn the language of the plant, and the plant will speak to you, not out loud necessarily, but the plant will speak to you, and you will learn what the plant will express itself in different ways, when it's happy versus not, when it needs water, and you know, it's a living being. It, you know, some people will argue whether it's sentient or not. I'm not here to get into that, but it is a living, it is alive. And observation, you know, check in on it now and then, every time after you water, and you'll get a sense very quickly as to whether it liked what you gave it or not. And then you have to assess, was it just the, you know, there's other factors, but just observation and try to remember that a plant is not a machine. It's not like a car where you can put higher octane gas in it and just hit the throttle and make it go faster. There are some times when you have to treat it like an animal, where it's a living thing, where you can hurt it. And so you have to observe, like if you were suddenly you're going to get a guinea pig and you never had a guinea pig, you don't know what to feed it, you don't know how to take care of it, you have to observe. So observe. And then there are other times when you can treat a plant like it's a machine, when it's like it doesn't know. You can keep it in vegetative state forever and it won't matter. It's not going to get hurt and wonder why the sun isn't going down. And develop, you know, so it's a combination of techniques that you learn mostly through observation and then, of course, trial and error.
Well said. Well, we covered a lot of stuff in this episode in regards to plant training and increasing yield. I appreciate you coming on today. Can you tell the listeners how they can find you? And is there anything upcoming in the future that you want to talk about?
Well, I'm Kyle Cushman 420 on Instagram, and that's my main outlet. Besides YouTube, which is sponsored, of course, by Holy Grown Co. And how great is that? That you can now have access to all of these just hundreds of varietals. And So there is a lot, you can search either Homegrown or Kyle Cushman on both YouTube and on Google. And there's tutorials that we've been doing now for 8 years plus hundreds of hours of cloning and drying and planting and harvesting and strain evaluations and what they're good for and different ailments. And so there's a whole lot of video out there that I've put a lot of work into, and that's what I'm most proud of. And then don't forget, I didn't even say it once, don't forget my podcast. We just had an awesome episode with Jim Belushi. You know, we did our Christmas episode with you, of course, Mr. Grow It. And so we're now in our second episode. We're well along in our second season, rather. And that's on all streaming platforms. And I'm really enjoying doing that and going to bring some really interesting guests in the future.
Awesome. Yeah, really great podcast. Once again, thanks for having me on. And for the audience, I'll definitely have a link to that episode that I did with him on his podcast down in the YouTube description section below, along with a link to get to him. So you guys can easily access how to get to Kyle's social media. Kyle, thanks so much for coming on. This has been awesome. I really appreciate your time today. You broke down a lot of good information in regards to plant training, and I think it's really valuable for a lot of my audience. So once again, thank you so much, and hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
You as well. You're very welcome, and grow your own, everybody.
Peace out, everyone. Catch you in the next episode.